Hey, what is going on, Los Angeles? It's J.Dot Tita, and once again, I hope that you're well on this December 8th, 2023. I am getting you this second special edition episode of JT the LA Storyteller podcast because of the time-sensitive nature of the discussion and because Lupe's story is one that is highly relevant to this moment around Gaza. So if you haven't done so yet, please be sure to follow slash subscribe to the show wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you are already subscribed or following the show, please be sure to review it as soon as you can, as that will really help Los Cuentos get to more and more of Los Angeles. Okay, until the next time, stay vigilant and stay tuned. It's J.Dot T.Dot out with more soon. It's Jimbo times. Lupe Cardonas, thank you so very much for joining me on JT the LA Storyteller podcast today. How is it going? I believe you're running errands.
Yes, I'm running errands. And I mean, things are as good as they could be considering, you know, what's going on in the world and the fact that we have this, you know, court date that's coming.
Right, exactly. So I want to make the Los Cuentos listenership aware of your story because this is pressing and it's kind of like an accumulation of so many different issues, so many different institutional issues that continue affecting our community, even as we do our best to move forward, maybe even play by the rules, do our part with respect to our culture and then move on. There are still these institutional frameworks that put us in a corner, and thus we have to organize, we have to resist, we have to fight back, and you're in the process of that. But before we get into the nitty gritty, maybe you can tell me a little bit about your career and how long you've been teaching,
Sure.
a teacher, including in various states, not just here in Cali.
Correct. Yes. So I have been a teacher for 24 years. I am credentialed to teach English and social studies. So that's quite a lot of different, it covers a lot of different topics that I can teach, from like ELD, you know, English 9, 10, 11, 12, journalism, yearbook, you know, ethnic studies, Mexican American studies. I've taught like a lot of things in my 24-year career, thousands and thousands of students. And I've taught in the state of Arizona, the state of Texas, and a majority of my career has been in California.
100%, Lupe. And would you tell me for a moment what inspired you to teach to begin with?
Well, when I was in high school, I wasn't a perfect student. I didn't understand, you know, exactly, I knew I liked to learn, but I didn't understand exactly why education was important for my future, because no one had gone to college, you know, in my family. But what I noticed was there were classes that I would understand the material, and sometimes my friends, my peers would be kind of a little bit lost. And so I found that I had a good way of kind of translating teacher talk. Like I would be able to take what the teacher was teaching and like make sense of it in my head, and then be able to like, you know, help my friends understand it in a way they would be able to get it. And so that kind of planted a seed in me. But when I went to Oxnard Community College and then I transferred to UCLA, in my mind, what I was really wanting to do with my education was I wanted to do like development in Mexico and for communities in Central America and in the U.S. that were, you know, like living in poverty. So I wanted to like try to figure out the answer to help people who work hard to be able to reap the benefits of their labor but I didn't understand exactly what that would look like. And so I was majoring in Chicana and Chicano studies and Latin American studies at UCLA when a friend that I, that was in the same program with me, Steve Vettis, his girlfriend at the time, was the mayor of San Fernando, Cindy Montañez.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She, yeah, the late and great and powerful Cindy Montañez, she had, told him to help her find like someone who would be active with the students, and teach social studies. And so at that point, I had not really like fully considered being a teacher, but I was like, you know what, I could do that and I do care about the kids. So you know what, go for it. Like, put me in the interview process, and I got the job, and it changed my whole life. That was in the year 2000.
Wow.
And so yeah, so now I'm in my 24th school year, and I still am the same person, and I still believe in the same things. I just, have done it through education.
Absolutely, Lupe. And you mentioned at the top that you really wanted to get out and speak or connect or empower working class communities. And I
Right.
take it this is because you hailed from a working class community yourself. I take it that this is something that you
Yes.
related with at the outset and that you've hung on to over the years during your career and beyond.
Absolutely. My family were, both my parents were migrant farm workers. My tia and my tios, they all like, were little kids running around. My parents were little kids running around in the fields. My grandmother made tortillas with Cesar Chavez on the strike line, back in the Central Valley. So yeah, it was definitely a part of me, a part of my family life, but it's also like a humanity thing. I'm all around me, I see all these beautiful, powerful human beings that are suffering for no reason at all, other than like, the structure of our economy and the system that allows for what I would say is like hoarding of resources by a few, where the masses are suffering, and we're not talking about people that just sit around and watch novelas all day. We're talking about hardworking people. And that causes all kinds of other problems, health issues, mental health issues, and then like my students, I see them, and they're hurting. They're scared about where they're going to live. They're housing insecure. There's all kinds of things that happen. And as an educator, I really want to help them see the connections between their lived experiences, these systems that they did not create, in a way, sort of free themselves from that shame and guilt of, poverty and, all these other things that they've experienced, and then hopefully help them to like see themselves as agents who can be a part of creating a better world.
Yeah, and especially as you mentioned all this, I realized that you noted at the top going to Oxnard Community College. So
Yeah.
if you're familiar with Oxnard, and I was not until maybe later in my 20s or something of that sort, but when you get there, you can see these bodies, these people in plain daylight, as one might say, working their hearts out. And through thin and thick, rain or shine, actually. And so if you're coming from that background, it's hard to just forget. It's hard to just delete that as a file through your memory somewhere. It's actually going to remain with you throughout your life because it says a lot about what California actually is and does, and who California actually is, how this economy, this agriculture economy, in particular, the sunniest state of the union is actually conducted and maintained. It's because of these bodies, because of the commitment of folks like your parents
and their neighbors, their relatives, and as many people as are willing to do that work because they have no other choice, because this is what has been left to them for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to Real Mesa High School, and it's like right nestled in the middle of strawberry fields.
Wow, yeah.
And exactly what you're saying, is the truth. And then, that generational sort of like trauma that comes from that, because there's nothing wrong with, working with your hands. There's a lot of people that they love to have their hands in the earth. That's not the issue. The issue is the lack of like respect for that. The
Yes.
lack of like compensation for that work that then translates into, these other problems, right? And so I was also impacted by, like people who maybe did not ever sit down to like analyze these things. They didn't take ethnic studies, and there was a lot of like dating trauma, bad relationship skills. Oxnard at that time was the city with the highest teenage pregnancy rate.
Wow.
And so, so that, my friends, my cousins, I was old when I had my first kid. I was 18,
Wow.
so yeah, so all of those things, come into play, like these structural things in the world, that are hundreds of years old in the making, impact us today. And a lot of times we don't look at that. We just walk around with, passed down trauma, passed down shame, and that's what I don't want for my students. I want for our communities, for us to know that we deserve better, that we are not that, we're not the institution. The institution wasn't created for us, and we need to stick together to create something better that suits us, the masses of the people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I really value the path that you've taken because I'm also aware that you and your colleagues were fundamental in actually working with this institution to the best of your ability to carve a new way forward for that next generation. And this is to say that y'all are the team behind placing ethnic studies in the curriculum before students graduate from the K through 12 system. And so now the state of California has made it a requirement for students who attend public schools here to take an ethnic studies course. And so you and your team have been behind that. And it's been a long journey, I can only imagine. But maybe tell us a little bit about the background for this and how your role fits into it all.
Hey, Los Angeles. I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. I just want to take a moment to invite you to my Patreon channel, which supports JT the LA Storyteller podcast in more ways than one, and which also provides just a little more from each convo. And of course, this is because it takes a little bit of work to put this podcast together, including research and reaching out to folks and scheduling things. And then studio time, editing time, finally publishing, and then a little bit of marketing time. And the Patreon channel is just the best way to support all of that, to support independent storytelling in LA by JT the LA Storyteller. So I would love your support, and I can give you my word that it's going to be more than worth it. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, definitely. I'm one of, thousands and thousands of people, the grassroots that, organized with students and parents and teachers and even, good administrators saying that our youth deserve to see themselves in the curriculum. And in California, we've had like Chicano studies, Black studies, AAPI studies, Native studies for, some time, 60s and 70s, but it was always like if you had somebody who wanted to teach it that knew it, if you had support, it was never like a thing, like mandatory. So, here in LA, really, after the fiasco of what happened in Tucson with Mexican American Studies being attacked. Here in LA, some teachers were like, we need to be on the offensive, not the defensive. We need to make this a requirement because they're going to come for it here too. And so that's when, you know, like Ethnic Studies Now Coalition, Semillas Anahuacalmecac, that's when, you know, the Raza Studies Now Coalition, Unión del Barrio, the Association of Raza Educators, all started to organize for resolutions in different school districts, while, you know, people like Luis Alejo, and then later on Jose Medina, started in a more formal setting, drafting, you know, these different bills to make it a graduation requirement. So Luis Alejo successfully passed AB 2016, yes, which was the creation of the model curriculum, which we were a part of. We were appointed by the state, me and Teresa and others. And then eventually AB 101, there was the Medina bill passed, and that was the one that made the graduation requirement. And there was also AB 1460, which was the graduation requirement for the CSUs that came after AB 101. And so like, it's beautiful to recognize that it's become institutional, but we really, really need to give credit to these like grassroots folks who, you know, at the grassroots level, were working with familias, with families, and, you know, solidarity across ethnic groups, intersectional voices, you know, that were really the push that helped people like Luis Alejo and Jose Medina and others get these bills passed.
Right. And so I really appreciated your mentioning at the outset that this was all part of a grassroots effort. And when we were, even as we were talking about Oxnard, we were talking about people working with the ground and working within, yes, roots and committing their whole selves to this labor, to this effort, to this struggle through and through. And so now, after 23 years, after your work with respect to ethnic studies alongside your colleagues, now the reason that we are connecting is because I attended one of the recent rallies that was held by the Association of Raza Educators in solidarity with Palestine. And I learned there that you, as well as one of your colleagues, are actually being sued and being taken to court as soon as this upcoming Thursday, December 14th, yes, for what exactly? You're going to have to clarify for us.
I'm confused myself exactly, but the lawsuit is, it's called something like Concerned Jewish Parents versus, you know, Guadalupe Carrasco Cardona, Teresa Montaño, Liberated Ethnic Studies, Cecily Mayart Cruz, and United Teachers Los Angeles. And the lawsuit essentially claims that because our perspective on ethnic studies is one that is historical, it's based on, you know, like history of the development of ethnic studies, includes Arab American studies, and it includes Palestine, that it makes Jewish folks feel unsafe. And there is no harm. There's absolutely no harm that's been caused because, you know, there's no harm that's been caused. There are no actual students or parents that are actually a part of this case. There are two lawyers, it's a couple, who are the ones that filed the suit against us. This is a couple who is also, they have submitted lawsuits for Trump claiming election fraud. So these are Trump supporting Zionists. A majority of the the lawsuit language? Is there sort of like religious fanaticism of why they do believe that, Palestine is the actual homeland of their people? So these are, Zionists. And so essentially that is why they, are suing us. Interestingly, the three women listed on the lawsuit are Chicana, and Cecily Meyer Cruz is Chicana and Black. So, and another thing that's interesting is in ethnic studies, we believe in self-determination. And so I, as a Chicana, like my field that I'm not going to say I'm an expert, but like the most expert of all the ethnic studies disciplines is, Chicano studies. And I am not, Asian American, I'm not Arab, I'm not Palestinian, I'm not a Pacific Islander. So I can as respectfully teach those, as respectfully as I can by learning and immersing myself in the field as much as I can. But ultimately, I have to teach what they have said is the field of AAPI studies, because of self-determination. And in AAPI studies, they have come together. They even drafted a le letter at the CSU level stating that Arab American studies and Palestine is a part of AAPI studies. So that is nothing that I or Teresa or even Cecily, who doesn't even teach ethnic studies, she's the president of UTLA, could change. Like, that's not my decision to make. I am a Chicana. I teach Chicano studies. I teach ethnic studies from a self-determination perspective, adhering to what their fields say should be taught to the K through 12 students.
And Lupe, for our clarification, when was this lawsuit first filed against you and your colleague?
It was, I think it was April of 2022.
Just this
So
past
20.
April.
Not 23, 22, April 22.
Got it. Okay.
So it's going on, close, a year and a half to 2 years at this point.
Right. And so during this time, is it that you have postponed the hearing, or is it that you've gotten several letters in the mail? How is it that it's led all the way into this December, actually, for the first court hearing?
So the original date was set, I think, last December. And then we filed for dismissal. And then the judge set a date for, I think it was January 19th of 23. And then we were prepared to show up to court, but the judge said that they were going to review the briefs and make a decision based on the briefs. But before that could happen, it was September this year, the judge said that the plaintiffs had to add names because it only had said Jewish, concerned Jewish parents, and they didn't have any names there. So they had until October 1st. And then the plaintiffs, they alerted the judge that they were going to be adding names. And so when October 7th happened, they were drafting it. So at that date, they went ahead and added the name of a teacher. Her name is Amy Lesserman. And they also started essentially blaming us for October 7th.
I
So there's
see.
a second amended draft that they submitted. And so then it got quiet for a while. The judge had it in their possession. And then finally, the day of the rally that you were at, that morning is when we got a call from our lawyers that they had received this date of December 14th. So essentially, it was like a long time sort of like waiting for this point to come.
Wow. And so you are in your 21st or 22nd year teaching. And as you noted, you are teaching part of a curriculum that has been placed on your desk because mm-hmm. this is the program. This is what has been required of every teacher or educator within the system more recently, given the passage of the ethnic studies curriculum. How is it that receiving this letter, receiving this notice in the first place felt for you, considering your time with the community, considering your decades with students and families who you've sought to empower at every step in your path?
Okay, what was the question? I apologize. I got lost on the question.
Just how did it feel to receive this letter?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. It felt good to finally be able to have our day in court. But it also felt a little scary.
Oh, and I mean originally. When this lawsuit first came to your attention, how did that feel? Oh. How did that strike you?
It was really scary because, we have been a part of this movement for ethnic studies because we want what's best for students. And, we know that students of color have been marginalized in mainstream curriculum. So, we do it out of love for all these students of color, and quite honestly, like even for love of our non-students of color, like our Jewish students and our white students, because they also deserve to know a whole, more truer history. And so it felt really scary that even though like we are really driven by love and this notion of, seeking a more truer story, a more democratic story, that we would be accused of hate.
Right.
And then, honestly, it's traumatic to be called anti-Semitic. One of the most horrific villains on the face of this earth that has ever lived is Hitler and what he has done to Jewish people. And I'm like adamantly against, anti-Semitism. I'm adamantly against, the horrific things that our Jewish siblings have experienced. I do not believe in discriminating. I do not believe in disrespecting people of, the Jewish culture and Jewish faith. And so to be called an anti-Semitic person was really painful. It was scary. It was frustrating. Yeah, when we first received it, that's exactly how it felt. And but what has come since then has been really beautiful because I've learned so much more about our Jewish relatives who, who believe in what we believe in, who also recognize that, the people of Palestine are suffering and that it's a new form of genocide. And they know that we, respect Jewish people, that we respect the Jewish faith. And that has been beautiful, developing closer relationships with people of all ethnic groups, including our Jewish relatives.
Right, Lupe. And would you say actually that with respect to the mass harm inflicted on Jewish people in the 20th century, and the fact that you are an ethnic studies teacher and someone who is well familiar with the story of her people, would you say that you have an intimate connection with the concept, the very concept of genocide, and the very concept of an indigenous people being robbed of their land and being cast aside as though they were worthless? Because I would imagine that given your connection to your parents and your heritage, this love for the land, and then also your knowledge about how this land has been ruthlessly taken from people and is still so, that you are extremely sensitive to the idea of robbing anyone of their dignity and their right to dignity as a human being.
You're absolutely correct. Like, the connection to land is so, it's so like, so intertwined with your identity and who you are. And you're right. Like, that is totally a reason why I think my whole life I have felt a connection to our Palestinian relatives, because all my life I've been aware of how, you know, they've been uprooted from their native land, and the pain and you know, that they feel having to become a like diasporic people, spread out, you know, as refugees throughout the world, which is very similar to like our indigenous, you know, Mexican, Central American, Latin American, South American, you know, siblings as well, who are, you know, having to flee in some cases because of war, in some cases just, you know, the, you know, poverty, the violence of poverty. And so, yeah, you're right. That definitely makes me feel more connected to what is happening currently in Palestine as well.
Absolutely, Lupe. And so please tell us how you are organizing around support for you and your colleague, because at this point, I believe we both can appreciate that seeing the community and connecting with the greater community out there, the one that knows our purpose, our intention behind this education, behind these conversations. Would you tell us a little bit about how folks can support you and your colleague leading up to December 14th or on the day of? What can we do? How can we show out? How can we support you all?
Thank you. I think, you know, the awareness, like people becoming aware, is really important. And then I would say if they can support by actually being present the day of, that would be wonderful. We're going to be meeting at the federal courthouse on First Street in downtown Los Angeles at about 8:30 to 9 in the morning, for, you know, a little educational rally and press conference. The courthouse only fits about 60 to 70 people. So, you know, whoever can go in and actually witness the hearing, you know, would be welcome to do so, as long as, you know, they come in and don't plan to disrupt the case, because that's something that we need to ensure doesn't happen. But we definitely are, we have people who are planning an educational rally outside that would be really great for people to come together to learn a little bit more. The outcome of this case is really important, because it's really about, you know, pushing back on censorship and pushing back on using lawfare to get your way and to silence people. It's about defending ethnic studies and the guiding principles of ethnic studies, which include, you know, critiquing of such institutions as, like, you know, settler colonialism, for instance, which is very, you know, much a part of this Palestine question. You know, so I think that if, you know, people can support by staying aware and like allowing other people to be really aware, it has been wonderful, as I said before, that, you know, despite the horrific nature of what's going on in the world right now, that people have come together from all different ethnic backgrounds and all different, you know, intersectional identities, and have said, you know, we stand together to push back against, you know, Zionist lawfare and weaponizing accusations of anti-Semitism in order to silence people to get, you know, their way.
Right, Lupe. And at the beginning, we were noting Arizona's ban on Mexican American studies in 2010, and the way that this was ultimately found unconstitutional by a court 7 years after the fact. Ultimately, justice prevailed, but it was and remains an example of lawfare, as you put it, or silencing communities, especially communities who are now finding a way through the institution by inviting critique of that institution. It's an example of how these movements are slowed down, but also how our people continue persisting. And I very much see that in you, as well as your colleagues and the community that you all form. I'm honored to be in conversation with you. And I do want to give you the last word, because I know you're on your way to take care of two sick kids of yours, as you said. So for our listeners' reference, for the Los Cuentos listenership, know that Lupe is an educator, a mom, a wife, and someone who loves her community, to be certain, given what we've discussed. But I want to get you the last word, Lupe, as to what this moment means for you and how you plan to push forward, including with the support of your community.
Thank you so much for allowing me to share my cuento. And yeah, I think that the what I would like to get out of this is that, you know, we the people who make everything happen in the world, you know, we create the wealth, we create the knowledge, we create the relationships and the love, that we deserve the dignity to have our stories told. We deserve the dignity to be able to walk around this world with hope and the ability to live to our utmost potential. And that if we stay together and we fight for what is right and for our cuentos to continue to be told, that we have a future that is beautiful, but it has to be a future that we create for us, by us, so that we can have everything that we deserve in this world. And that, you know, they can try and shut us up and take us down, but together we are more mighty than their, you know, their tanks and their weapons and their billions of dollars of funding that they put towards, you know, imperialism and, you know, colonial settler economies, etc.
Absolutely, Lupe. I'm completely in agreement with you. I think, as has been seen more recently, as you know, as someone who's fought for this work for so long, you know that you do it because you intend to stand on the right side of history with respect to your ancestors, all the way up to respect for your parents and the community, the neighborhood, the background that you hail from. I really have appreciated this conversation with you so much. And yes, for the listenership out there, do trust that if you're able to get out this Thursday, December 14th from 8:30 to 9 a.m. or as soon as 8:30 a.m. in downtown Los Angeles at the federal courthouse, it'll mean quite a lot. It is empowering to join a community that is not afraid of speaking up, that is not afraid of speaking for the dignity of all peoples. That's exactly why I knew it was important for us to talk today. And I really have to thank you so, so much for it on behalf of the Los Cuentos listenership.
Thank you. It was really dope to be here with you.
Okay. We will be in touch. Let me let you get to your little ones, and I hope that they're well soon.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Talk soon, Lupe.
Okay, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Jimbo times.